Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 3 of the Sightside Podcast. My name is James Hickey, and I'm your host. I want to start this episode by telling everyone about a time where one time I got written up for trying to solve a customer's problem. And the write-up wasn't for failing, it was for trying the wrong way. And this is the thing that irks me about it, is the problem was never solved. The customer never got what they needed, they ended up leaving, and I still got the write-up because the process mattered more than the outcome. And this, as a neurodivergent individual trying to live and get by in a normal world, I've never understood the neurotypical fascination with methods over results. I've always been a results-oriented individual, and this has run me into quite a bit of friction, especially involving leadership over various jobs over the years. And if this is a friction point that I've dealt with, I'm sure that other neurodivergent professionals have dealt with it the same way. So I really want to dive into it. Mainly the friction point between the neurodivergent talent and the organizations really comes down to the obsession with methods over results. So, if you've ever been told to like stay in your lane, if you've ever gotten in trouble for going outside of the chain of command or watched a problem go unsolved because solving it would have meant breaking protocol or an SOP or anything like that, then this episode is definitely for you. Last episode, we talked about what applied neurodivergence is, reframing neurodivergent cognition from liability to an asset. And today, we're going to dive into a specific place where that friction shows up, the workplace obsession with how you did something over what you actually accomplished, and what we can do to mitigate any negative outcomes from that. I'm going to set the scene for how the time I got written up. And this is, many, many years ago, I worked as a table games dealer for a well-known nationwide gaming company. So I was working as a table games dealer, and this particular night I was dealing a game called Mississippi Stud, which if you've never heard of it, don't play it. Don't go there. Anyway, Mississippi Stud was not a very popular game. Most of the time, if I got assigned a deal with this, it meant a long shift of just kind of standing there watching the TVs over the bar. But this night I had a player come in. Once I tapped in, there was someone actually sitting there playing, and I wouldn't say he was a high roller, but he was playing about $50 a hand, which adds up, pretty quick. I'm sitting here, facing him. He's facing me. His back is to the casino floor. And as we're talking, he kept on asking me for a drink. He's like, oh, can I get a beer or something? I want to, something. And it was a fairly slow night. So as I'm dealing to him, we're kind of, making small talk. I'm doing my little dealer patter and whatnot. And I'm looking over his shoulder, trying to find a cocktail waitress or flagging one down. Finally, after someone came by, I'm like, hey, can you, please send someone over? I have a guest who wants a beverage. And they said, oh, well, send someone over. And no one came. This was a substantial amount of time. This was an hour. I ended up going on break. I came back. He was still playing, still didn't have a drink. And by hour two, he was not happy about it. I mean, he's playing, as I said, $50 a hand, which adds up. He's losing he's losing. And this is one of the, I feel I need to point out that this is one of the challenges as far as customer service in gaming goes, is especially as a dealer, we were required to maintain a positive customer experience for them while they're actively losing their money, which is hard to do. Alcohol helps. Well, alcohol can hurt too. People get, I've seen them rage quit a lot of games when they lose big, especially if they're drunk, but a little bit, you want to see the guests taken care of. So I'm, waiting, and we're talking. And then finally, after a couple hours, I see one of the beverage supervisors walk by, and I flagged him down. I was friendly. I was professional. I was like, excuse me, this player's been waiting 2 hours for a drink. Could you please send someone over? He just kind of looked at me and walked out. And can you guess what the result was? Not only did the supervisor not find a waitress to bring something over or even bring a drink himself, he went to go find one of the table game supervisors and demanded that I be written up for going outside of the chain of command, and basically that serving customers is not his job. And the absurdity of this was, this is a company that was, they had this overwhelming culture of, guest services and customer service is everyone's job, from the, all CEO all the way down to the janitor type situation, that we're there to enhance the guest's experience, which sounds good on paper. As a neurodivergent person, I would expect that to be the, expectation for everyone. However, this is one of the situations where it, a chain of command or that concept of hierarchy applied, that idea, I've always struggled with that. And I know I'm not the only neurodivergent who has, we struggle with this concept of hierarchy. So they, what bothered me about it is they were more upset that I spoke to a supervisor than the fact that the customer who had dropped a couple grand at this point on a table did so without ever getting a beverage. The player ended up leaving. He never got his drink. And after the shift, I got pulled up into the office and I was formally written up. And I was flabbergasted, but I can, you know, I'm like, all right, you know, it is what it is. And to pile on this, there was an aftermath. So later on that week, we would have, pre-shift meetings, and there was an announcement to all the dealers that basically kind of highlighted the situation, and the message was, stay in your lane. And, lane is in, we are, you know, dealing drinks, let beverage people handle the beverages. And which really made no sense to me again, because, you know, as a table games dealer, most of our income came from tips. So if the gamblers are getting pissed off, they don't tip us. So it's absolutely our lane. And I guess the punchline to this is this happened, 12, 13 years ago, and I'm still salty about it. So this is what I didn't understand at the time, but I have language for now, is that neurotypical institutional culture a lot of times will prioritize process over outcome. They want a method that's teachable, method that's repeatable, something that's legible to management and is controllable. And this is a symptom of, you know, top-down thinking of, you know, learn the procedure, apply the procedure, get the result, and the method proves that you understand the system. However, if you skip the method, if you get the right result but using the wrong method, you're not seen as effective. You're seen as insubordinate. And, you know, the beverage supervisor in my situation, he didn't care about the customer. He cared that I went around the established process, to which him was, you know, it was a violation. In my natural neurodivergent results orientation, I don't think that way. My brain doesn't operate that way. I saw a problem. The customer needs a drink. I saw a solution. Here's a beverage supervisor. I connected them. There's no steps. I just saw the answer. And this is the penalty of pattern recognition. This is the same thing that happens in, you know, back in math class. If a kid can't show their work, you know, 7 times 8 equals 56. I didn't calculate it. I just knew it. I put it down. But if you can't show the steps, you lose points, even if the answer is right. And this is, you know, this is common. It's that concept of show your work. It's the idea of method over result. And this, you know, I hate to say this wasn't a one-off. I would say that the casino thing was one example, but this is a pattern that I've dealt with ever since I first started working in my, you know, in my teen years, all the way up through present day. This pattern of, this disconnect in communication, where I have a, bottoms up result that I know will work, and compare that to the top down methodology that might complicate a process. Long story short, my neurodivergent bluntness has gotten me into trouble more times than I can count. If I'd see something broken, I'd say something, and instead of, hey, thanks for catching that, I'd get a, who do you think you are? It's cost me jobs. It's cost me, you know, relationships with supervisors, and cost me opportunities. And the pattern, it's this, you know, I see a problem. I flag the problem directly, because that's how I communicate, and the hierarchy will react to the how instead of the what. So I would get labeled as, you know, difficult, not a team player, insubordinate, doesn't respect authority, which was the opposite of my intention. And the injustice was I was usually right. The problem that I flagged was real. And being right didn't matter. What mattered was I didn't follow the process. And the thing is, another lesson I had to learn the wrong way is that results don't protect you if you go about them the wrong way. This is where another one of those difficult lessons that I had to kind of learn on my own, navigating the workforce as an undiagnosed neurodivergent individual. And the word I had to learn the hard way is circumspection. Circumspection is defined as careful consideration of circumstances and consequences, thinking before speaking, and knowing when and how to raise something, not just what. So, you know, and this the tax I had to pay because of a late diagnosis is this is something that no one taught me. You know, there was no accommodation, no coach, no therapist explaining, here's how you navigate hierarchy when you're wired to work like this. I had to learn it by getting burned over and over again. So to me, what does, you know, circumspection look like today? You know, I pause before flagging something. Even if the problem is obvious, you know, pause. Consider who is the right person to hear this. Consider what's the right framing. And consider, is the battle worth the cost? So I do that pause. I say, okay, well, does this need to be said? Does this need to be said by me? And does this need to be said right now? And the hard truth is sometimes the most strategic thing you can do is just to let something fail. And it's not that you didn't see it coming. It's more so that the organization isn't ready to hear it from you in that moment in that way, which is freaking painful for those of us, you know, neurodivergent, letting something fail, especially if we were in a position to do something about it. It's painful for a results-oriented brain, but it's survival. So when it comes to navigating hierarchy, and these are just some practical strategies, I would say that I would... reframe the accommodation. You know, here's something I want to offer, especially if you're neurodivergent and struggling with this dynamic. And correction, navigating hierarchy. So when we apply this to accommodations in the workplace, and this is a big part of the neurodivergent in the workforce conversation, I would say that the accommodation involved with the hierarchy navigation isn't so much like the quiet room or flexible schedule. It's more a communication protocol. It's more like saying to your supervisor or having a, you know, sit down or a heart to heart and say, you know, when I raise something, if I bring up a concern or anything, please understand I'm not being insubordinate. I'm pattern matching. If I see something, give me a moment to explain what I see before you react to how I said it. Granted, this is going to take a great deal of open-mindedness on leadership and a great deal of circumspection on the neurodivergence end. However, I feel there is we can make unity here, that we can make progress. So here's some practical strategies how that would look like in practice. Okay. Number one, lead with the outcome, not the problem. Instead of saying this process is broken, try saying, I want to make sure we hit whatever the goal or whatever the metric is. I noticed something that might get in the way. Number two is frame it as a question. Instead of, you know, this is wrong, try, have we considered? It gives room for them to engage instead of defending. You know, you don't want your supervisors or anyone to get defensive right away. Number three, especially, document this in writing. You know, send an email, write it down. This does two things. It creates a paper trail if you're right, and it gives you processing time to choose your words. Number four, I would say, is find the person who can hear it. Sometimes the chain of command is the problem. If you could find someone who's willing to listen, even if they're not your direct supervisor. Number five is know when to let it go. Sometimes the battles just aren't worth it. You know, some battles just aren't worth the cost. If you've raised it, documented it, and it's been ignored, you know, you've done your part, protect yourself, move on. And the balance is, I'm not saying abandon your instincts. Your pattern recognition is an asset, but you have to learn how to deploy it strategically. So this is, you know, as we tie this back into our, this concept of applied neurodivergence, we tie this back to applied neurodivergence, and this is an example of what applied neurodivergence looks like in practice. It's not about suppressing your results orientation. It's about understanding the environment that you're operating in and adapting your approach without abandoning those strengths. Your ability to see problems before they become catastrophes, that's very valuable. Your instinct to solve things directly, that's also valuable. But if you can't communicate it in a way that the organization can receive, they're going to be resentful, you're going to get written up, you're going to get a target on your back. And that's the opposite of our intention here. It's not the goal. Applied neurodivergence means developing the skill to translate your pattern recognition into languages that hierarchies can hear. And it's not about becoming neurotypical, it's just about becoming strategic. So I want to thank everyone for listening today. For, you know, any of my neurodivergent listeners today, if you've been punished for solving problems the wrong way, you know, you're not alone. It's a pattern. And it's not your fault that institutions value process over outcomes. It's just the way it is. But if you have the language for it and you can communicate it effectively, then you could start to navigate it deliberately and come to much better outcomes. For any leaders, if you have an employee, especially a neurodivergent employee who keeps going outside of the chain of command, ask yourself what they're seeing that you're not. This friction, it might be a signal, it's not necessarily the problem, and you can come to a consensus. So I want to thank everyone again for tuning in. This has been The Site Side, where we are pioneering the field of applied neurodivergence. From friction to flow, I will talk to everyone on Tuesday. Thank you again.